A guest sees more in an hour than a host sees in a year. This is Dr. Harrell Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Instant Inspiration. Now, this is a Polish proverb, and you wouldn't think the Polish would come up with something like that when you say it takes so many Polacks to screw in a light bulb. Of course, they never tell you how many priests it takes to do things and how many Germans it takes and how many Indians it takes, you know. And remember the story about the Indians? 99 bottles of beer on the wall, you know, 77 Indians standing tall. And, you know, there's all these interesting little stories that they have. Okay, those are kid stuff. A guest sees more in an hour than the host sees in a year. Now, why is that true? That's true because the older we get, starting at inception, the older we get, the more we get so accustomed to our surrounding that we don't see the possibilities that lay there. Now, I want to change that right now. And I want to change it twice, but I'll change it first by saying, the older we get, the more we ignore the reality that is all around us. And then I want to change it again. The older we get, the more we are aware of all the possibilities, the realities, the experiences that our world has to offer, and we dive into it with an abandon and a gusto without any thought of what anybody else is going to think. And that's wonderful, isn't it? That's wonderful. So we are not like the host who becomes blind to the environment around them. Another illustration of that would be of these most obnoxious Swiss people. They love life, they love the world, they love everything, and then they want to travel the world to see beautiful things. And all they have to do is to open their eyes and look at their own Alps, look at their own mountains, look at their own hillsides, look at their own cities, look at everything they got. They got the whole world right there. As beautiful as anyone could ever want it. Why anyone would ever want to leave Switzerland would be hard to figure out. And perhaps there are other things than just beauty to look at. And that may well be a reason for people traveling on and looking for new horizons and new joys. But the Swiss, living in their beautiful homes, overlooking the Matterhorn or other beautiful mountains, after a while, they don't even see it. They don't even see it. Not because they are stupid or anything, but they are just blinded to it. They don't see it because it just is so common. It's so common in their life. Now, here we are, here in Campo. We're surrounded by mountains. We look out here. And we see these gigantic boulders, these gigantic stones, and we see the grass growing up there. When it rains, it comes out all green, beautiful. And then as summer comes, they turn brown, and they become another shade. They become another beauty of themselves. And we look at the natural bushes here, the manzanita, that was the word I was looking for, the manzanita trees. And they are always green and always beautiful. And in spring, they have these most delicious seeds on them for animals, but not for us. You can take the leaves of the manzanita tree, and you can cook it and make a wonderful tea. You can take the bark, which naturally peels right off in your hand, and you can make a therapeutic drink that heals most any illness anyone could have in their world. We have a dozen other plants here that have wonderful medicinal purposes to it. The Indians used it regularly. You know, we really don't give the Indians credit for all the things they've done. And we don't give the Indians credit for the long lives that they've lived. We only look at the Indians currently living on reservations with a beer can and a short lifespan. But that's something we've done to them. The Indians are not all like that. The majority of the Indians, they leave the reservation and get going. They find something to do to involve themselves in life, and they make a place for themselves. Oh, they may keep a home on the reservation, But that's only because they don't have to pay taxes and other things like that for it. And it's a nice place to be. But they don't dare associate with the other Indians, because the other Indians have the same idea of getting something for nothing. And in the world, anybody who is wanting something for nothing usually gets just that, nothing. And this is true whether they're black or white or brown or red. We have people we call white who are the poor white. You call them the poor trash. And what these people are, they have no desire to go beyond. Now, you say, they do too. No, they don't. Our unemployment insurance pays so well that most of them can't get a job that pays better than their unemployment pays them. My grandson worked for a very prestigious company with a very high salary in welding, and when the stock market took a tumble, his job tumbled with it, and so he was off on relief. He was off on unemployment insurance. And he earned more take-home pay than he got on the job, because he didn't have to pay taxes and other things on these things, because that was his living expenses. And why should he go back to work? So he never did go back to work. And jobs were all around him, but he didn't go back to work, because why should he? And really, as you look at yourself as a normal human being, why would you go to work when you could play? And you had the same money and no responsibility, you know? And a lot of husbands, they run away on their wives. They dump them and let the wife take care of the family and the kids all by themselves. And people say, oh, that's so terrible, that's so terrible. No, not really. When the husband's at home, they didn't earn enough money to take care of the kids. The kids were starving. So as soon as the husband got out of the house, then the government helped them to have enough money so that the kids could eat and have proper medical care and go to school and do the other things in a much nicer way than when the old man was there. Now, I'm not recommending that the husbands run out on marriages, but I'm saying this oftentimes happens. And when a husband realizes that he's a detriment to the family rather than an asset, because he cannot make enough money to take care of his family, and he realizes, and I'm sure he does, that when he quits the family and runs away, he becomes a criminal. He's a criminal by not making payment to his family and helping them maintain it. That's the way the law sees him. But he would rather be a criminal and let the government take care of his family and feed them and house them and clothe them and give them medical care, rather than he being there and being unable to do it. You follow me? Mm-hmm. Now, that's a poor way to run our government. We, as a government, like to go around the world and teach other nations, the third world nations, how to make a go of living. We want to teach them sanitation. We want to teach them growing crops. We want to teach them living a good life. Here we go all over the world doing this with our Peace Corps, and we think we're such good people. Well, how much of that money, if we had spent it here at home on our own people, helping them? Do any of you know President Carter?
Yes.
Well, President Carter is no longer president. He hasn't been president for years, many years, I don't know, 20 years or better, you know? And yet, everyone knows about him. And what do they know about him? They know that he goes around helping build homes for people who cannot afford to do it themselves, and he helps them with his organization or whatever it is he does it through. And he himself pounds a couple nails. Truly, he doesn't pound a lot of them. He's in his 80s, you know, I mean, my God, what do you want out of the guy? But he inspires this wonderful program. He inspires this wonderful tribute to man's humanity to man. And we're so enjoying talking about man's inhumanity to man that we forget about man's humanity to man. Well, Mr. Carter was not blind to his home, his country, his world. Wherever he saw a need that he could do something about, and you can't do something about all of them, except to put them in the proper mental attitude. But whenever he felt that his physical self and his wife's physical self could be helpful in encouraging people to bring out the best in themselves. He was there. But this can only be done when you are not a host, when you're a guest in your world, when you're a person in your world who goes in with fresh new eyes to see everything that there is that is going on around you. And you look at everything that's fresh new eyes. And this is what I've trained myself to do over the years, to see all the world with fresh new eyes. What would you say, Ellen, about that? Would you say that's true?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you say that's true? What do I do?
You see only the good in everything.
But I see everything.
Oh, yes, also that behind and
and that is the art of seeing everything without judgment. Seeing everything and seeing it beautiful and good and calling forth its beauty and goodness. Now, some people might think that you're calling forth the awareness of it not being beautiful and good by seeing it. But when you see it, you call forth its beauty and goodness. I say, hey, the front door wasn't all the way closed. And our wonderful air-conditioned air in here was dashing out the front door. And Sylvia says, I didn't leave it open. Ingrid, I didn't leave it open. Ellen says, I didn't leave it open. Hey, I didn't say somebody left it open. I really don't care how it got that way. I think the dog probably got his toenail in there and pulled it open himself, you know, because he wanted to get out. But I didn't say somebody did it. I don't care who did it. I'm just saying, hey, there goes our nickels and dimes right out the door. It could be done in our air conditioner, but it's not. It could be done in our home, but it's not. So, you see, this is the point. This is the point. To see all these things, and not to complain about them, but just to make them aware. Now, I was working on the computer the other day, and I was wondering why the computer wasn't working. Well, on the front desktop of the computer, at some point, I had moved down a program to the bottom of the top of the bottom of the desktop. And it was just hanging there, just on the edge. But it was running. And so I was trying to do other things that says, you can't do that because you've got an open program. You can't do that because you've got an open program. And it was hidden. I couldn't see it. I looked everywhere. I pressed Control F, you know, F and F4, you know, and nothing happened. Nothing happened. Nothing happened. And it was very strange. But then when I took care of that, it was all in order again. Now, Ellen has a computer down there, and this extra computer, and the sound didn't want to come up on the sound system. So we checked here and checked there and checked here and checked there. There are so many places to check where the sound could be shut off. And we'll come with it yet. We found at least 6 places where it was okay. We didn't find the one where it was shut off. But we'll find that too. But we'll find it because we let go and let it be revealed to us. Ellen can walk down there right now, walk right to it, and press the button, and there it is. She says, oh, what'd I do? What'd I do? What'd I do? So I say, don't go pressing buttons. Say to yourself, I'm going to press this button and this button and see what happens. I'm going to press this button and this button. Say that to yourself. So then when you do this again, surreptitiously, accidentally, if you will, you'll know what you did. Here on this computer here, what was it we were running into the other day? And yeah, it stayed on caps. And we checked cap locks. We checked this. We checked that. We checked the other thing. And then Sylvia comes over there and she pushes down the control and some other silly thing. And then all of a sudden it's not caps anymore. And we said, what did you do? And she said, well, I don't know. I just pressed this. You know, and we have to remember.
Yeah,
hmm?
Yeah.
You what?
Mm-hmm.
You do remember.
Control shift.
Control shift. She pressed control shift. Now, why would that change cap? Apparently, the control locked the shift key in caps. And so when she pressed control shift, she then unlocked it. Normally, if you press down the cap lock and that'll lock it, then you press down the cap lock and that'll unlock it. But you see, these things are so common to us. We live with our machines and our fingers are whizzing along over our machines doing beautifully things. But Mr. Microsoft, He loves to give us surprises. And when our fingers accidentally dance across the keys and just gently kiss a key while we're touching another key, we're getting a double key action. And lo and behold, up comes database. Up comes this, up comes that. Up comes
the winning ticket to the...
Oh, now do you like that? Now, what did she say?
The winning ticket.
That's okay. That's enough. Now, does she believe it?
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it wouldn't come up, is
it? Now, I'm going to ask her this question, Ingeborg.
Yes.
Do you think she, and you say yes, do you think she's going to have the answer? The answer is yes.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Play the game, sweetheart. Sylvia?
Yes, sir.
What two keys do you press to get the winning number in the lottery? Now, don't try to figure it out. Don't ever look at the keyboard for the answer, because the answer is in your head. And it's like this. You know, you close your eyes and you put your fingers over there. And you touch, like in the telephone book. Let's see, what plumber shall I use? I don't know any of them, so, you know, what difference does it make? I got to get somebody. But this is the point. This is the point. We want to go beyond that happenstance or probability, touch the right buttons, and we want to touch the right buttons. Now, I'm joking, but is it a joke?
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not listening to me. Is it a joke? Does Sylvia know in her inner self the right two buttons to press on any computer to bring up the lottery number that's the winner?
Yes.
So? When are you going to do it? But you see, this is the difficulty about this. We are so accustomed. And you know when Sylvia is going to do it? She's going to do it when she becomes a guest on her computer. She will see all the ways the computer can be used that she never used it before, because she's been a host there so long and she's used it in a certain way so long, always the same way, and not realizing that new innovations have been created by the creators of Microsoft Word and by Windows and by all these other things. Well, why, they do something when they move it from 95 to 98 to 2000 to MT.
Yeah.
I mean, they surely do something, you know. And you and I could never get through the book telling of all the things. And then this is the fascinating thing. They say they don't know all the possibilities that are there, because they haven't tried all the keystrokes of the infinite number of keystrokes to see what they would do. And then the keystrokes have to be done in harmony with some other keystrokes. Like, for instance, you're dancing across the keys and you touch three keys at once when you didn't intend to, and then up comes the winning ticket of the lottery. Ho, 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 or some lovely thing like that. But become a guest in your home. Become a guest in your world. Become a guest on your computer, in your car. Become a guest in your car and look at your car like a guest would look at it. What a dirty car. Or what a beautiful car. My goodness, someone who used this swept it when they finished using it. Someone who used this didn't sweep it. And someone who used this left the ignition on. Twice this morning, I found the little ignition switch pulled out and left on when I was using the golf cart. Now, that's not terrible, but it's sort of wasteful because it runs the battery down. But of course, we always charge the battery constantly. But that doesn't make any difference. Why reduce the life of the battery in any way except through driving the car, you know? So a guest would look at the car and say, oh, what's that? That's the ignition switch. Well, why is it on? Oh, you know, you wouldn't notice that it was on till it was time for you to reach over and pull it out. And you say, oh, I did it already. Yeah, last night. But this is the wonderful thing about being a guest. So I recommend to each of us, we learn how to be a guest in our world. We learn how to be a guest in our life. We learn how to be a guest when we look in our closet and we say, what are all those clothes for? I've never seen them wear them, you know. I have never seen them wear any of them, in fact. What are all those clothes doing there? Why all those shoes, you know? How often do they change them? Why? And so she's a shoe horse, you know. She likes shoes, clothes horse. She likes clothes. She, he, this, whatever, you know. But the guest sees that. And the good guest says nothing, but guides their life by what they see. Well, I should look in my own closet. Yes, I got more shoes than I wear, too. I should take the ones I don't wear and put them in a box, and then my closet is easier to clean. I'll dust the bottom of it more often, you know. But this is the wonderful thing. See life as a guest sees life. Go to Switzerland and see the Alps, not through the eyes of the host, but through the eyes of the guest. And you'll write the most beautiful information you could ever want. So, my friends, I love you, I love you, I love you, and have a great, glorious day.